Hello and welcome to That Tech Pod, where we discuss all things e-discovery, data privacy, cybersecurity, and tech innovations. I'm Laura Milstein.
And I'm Kevin Elbert.
And today we are hopping on for a quick and maybe exciting bonus episode where we are talking about the RSA conference on May 6th, just a few days away. Kevin, for everyone listening, can you tell them what is this conference, why should they care, and why are we talking about it?
Yeah, sure. So this is the RSA conference. It's an annual thing. This year it's in San Francisco. It takes place May 6th through the 9th, which is next week. For about 32 years, the RSA conference has been a driving force behind the world's cybersecurity community. The RSA conference is an ongoing source for timely insight, interactions, actionable intelligence. The conference is designed to help cybersecurity professionals continuously strengthen their organizational skills and push their careers further. There's a whole bunch of different events. There's a whole bunch of different speaker tracks. There are different award show pieces, which we'll get into a little bit as part of this. And then there's just a million side things, little happy hours here or there, and just chances for people to get together. So it's a really good show. If you've never been, I would definitely recommend checking it out.
I love a good conference. More than just the actual conference, it's the meeting the people, the networking, and seeing people that you don't get to see every day, but you're like, oh, you're still in the industry. Love a good conference. And Kevin, we have a special guest that's coming on today to talk to us specifically about the RSA conference and a little bit about what's going on in their company and with them. Do you want to tell everyone who this surprise guest is for today?
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to be joined by Sashwat Sehgal. He is the co-founder and CEO of P0 Security. He spent most of his career building security and observability products for developers, DevOps, and security teams. Sashwat is passionate about solving problems for the world of cloud access security and helping security engineers control who has access to sensitive resources in their clouds. He enjoys playing tennis, spending time with his family, teaching his son how to play chess, and geeking out on all things security.
Awesome. Well, let's let him in. Sashwat, we are pumped to have you on today talking about the RSA conference, all the excitement, just days away. What is it, like 4 days from now? It is right around the corner. So we are really excited. Are you pumped for the conference?
Absolutely. It's the team has worked very hard to get us to where we wanted to be. And I'm very excited to be showing the judges, the audience, and everyone else what we've been up to over the last year and a half.
Kevin loves a good conference, so he's putting a lot of pressure on you.
For sure. Especially in San Francisco, you can't beat that.
Yep.
You can't.
As we like to say, it's the annual Oscar ceremony of the cybersecurity world.
Nice. I like that.
I love that. I'm really excited about it. Well, let's get a little crazy about it. So we've already talked a little bit about the conference before you came on, and I'm sure we'll dive a little bit deeper into that later. But before we do, I'd like if you'd walk us through some of your journey. So your flagship product launched November 2023, and now it's being selected as a top 10 finalist for the RSA conference. That's pretty crazy for the innovative sandbox of 2024. And I think that was November 2023, so it's less than a year. This is huge. This is a pretty big deal. Can you tell everyone a little bit about what's going on there? I'm just, wow. I mean, just to step back for everyone who's like, why is she so excited? To have a product flagship launch and then within a short period of time already be up for, as you're saying, the Oscars of cybersecurity. I mean, it's a pretty exciting move. Can you tell us about that? And what does that look like? How are you feeling? You nervous?
I won't say that I'm nervous. I am excited. Honestly, the early stage startup journey can be full of extremely high highs and full of extremely low lows. My philosophy is always to zoom out and look at the bigger picture. And we started the company a year and a half ago. And as you can imagine, the journey of an early stage company in a year and a half could be full of a lot of those extremely high highs and extremely low lows. But over the bigger time frame, we've been extremely happy with what we've been able to accomplish. We've been able to get much more traction than what I had hoped for at the outset. And we've been able to solidify and identify the problems that customers are facing and come up with a unique differentiated approach to solve them. And the sandbox competition is hopefully another milestone in what, you know, irrespective of the outcome, hopefully it's yet another milestone in what we expect to be like a multi-year journey towards securing cloud access for enterprise customers.
Nice. I mean, obviously, we're obviously big fans, and you know, we really like a good startup journey. You talked about highs and lows. What were some of the big challenges you all faced, and how did you overcome them?
Well, interestingly enough, the biggest challenge had almost nothing to do with our product thesis. The biggest challenge, roughly a year ago, was the Silicon Valley Bank collapse. if you ask me what was the single biggest moment when we were thinking about, okay, what the hell are we going to do next? It had almost nothing to do with customers or our product thesis. It had everything to do with what conspired in May of 2023. But thankfully, karma heads prevailed, and we lived to see another day. And everything else was more typical for what you expect out of an early stage journey, right? Early customers, customer feedback, some customers saying things are not working as they should, others saying, great, this works just as just exactly what we wanted, and a whole lot more. So a lot of those, and fast forward to where we are today, you know, really excited and pumped to be presenting to the team at RSA.
You're reminding us all of a traumatic time when with the bank. If you're listening and you don't know what we're referring to, go look it up. Where have you been? But for everyone else, yes, I'm sure you're feeling the same thoughts we are.
I mean, we even did a pod about it, and it was one of our best bonus episodes of last year.
It was a lot of listeners. So yeah, just check it out. But I want to talk about a little bit more in-depth stuff right now. So how do you envision universal access for all identities? And I'm talking both human and non-human evolving in the future. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. So zooming out a little bit, right? The broader problem that enterprise customers and security teams are interested in solving is how do we secure access to our sensitive resources? And 20 years ago, sensitive resources usually meant databases and other, you know, sensitive data behind a network boundary in a data center. The entities that had access to this sensitive data in such an environment were usually human users who required access to the network boundary. And once they were behind the network boundary, they usually had access to everything, right? And this was what I'd like to call the calmer and simpler times. And suddenly, fast forward 20 years, the cloud happened, SaaS happened, and there was an explosion of identities, both human identities as well as non-human machine identities. And these were not necessarily located behind a network boundary. These could be located anywhere. And the old way of doing things, which was, let's take a network boundary and secure access to the network boundary, wasn't sufficient. Why wasn't it sufficient? Because there was too many identities to begin with, and it was very difficult to secure access to the sensitive data set by just, you know, having some kind of a network boundary approach. That was the first problem. The second problem was suddenly there was a different owner of the cloud. Who was this owner? It was engineering teams, developer teams, SRE teams, platform teams, you name it, right? And the challenge with something like this was that security teams, you could give security teams more visibility into the cloud, but it was still very difficult for them to govern access without affecting a new stakeholder. You could, for example, very easily tell the security team, hey, these five people and these 10 service accounts or these 20 API tokens, there's something wrong with them. And their next...
Wait, I just have to jump in real quick. These are not small problems. As you're going through, I'm like, oh, he said, and next. these are big problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the problems end up being organizational. How do you help secure? How do you help security teams secure access to this to the sensitive data without affecting, you know, core developer workflows? And that is a problem that we identified, and that's the problem that we are trying to solve.
Can we go even like a little bit deeper? You mentioned obviously secure cloud access. Can you tell us a little bit about the product itself? What does it do? Can you explain really what this is doing and how this is helping organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. So the very first step is that we help inventory catalog all identities, human identities, machine identities, identity provider groups, or anyone else that might have access to the cloud, right? That's the very first step. The second step is that we run a risk assessment or a risk posture on every identity. We help answer questions like, okay, given your sensitive data, which of these identities have any kind of a security risk? These could be, for example, which human users are over-provisioned, which human users, for example, might have admin access, or which service accounts might have overprivileged access, which they haven't used. Or it could be which service account keys are stale, which of them haven't been rotated. Questions like these are the ones that we cover in the second step of assessing the security posture. The third step is we help automate the life cycle of access for both human users and machine users. What does that mean? So, for example, if you are a human user, we can help security teams define which human users should have standing access to any sensitive resource. We can also help automate the temporary just-in-time or short-lived access to any cloud resource for any human user. If you're a machine identity, again, we can help design simple workflows to infer who the human owner of that machine identity should be and present them with simple steps to remediate the risk or the finding for that machine identity. To summarize, those are the three steps. We first inventory, then we assess the risk posture, and then we automate the life cycle of access.
Can you get a little bit more granular on what is really setting P0 Security apart from other solutions that are on the market that are addressing similar challenges?
Yeah, great question. So I would look at the three categories of existing solutions. The first one would be legacy IGA solutions. And without naming names, the challenge with most IGA solutions out there on the market is that first, they were not built for a cloud environment. And a cloud environment has unique challenges in securing access because of all the things that I mentioned, the very high number of identities, the very high number of resources. The complexity of a cloud environment, it makes it very difficult to govern access, right? So that is the one benefit we have over legacy IGA solutions. Another benefit is that we help secure access for all kinds of identities. Historically, IGA solutions have been mostly focused on human identities, and that suddenly in the cloud, that becomes insufficient in and of itself. And what we are saying is you need to have a universal access governance solution that can solve the problem for human as well as non-human identities. And last but not the least, because of the problem that I mentioned, the ultimate custodians or the guardians of the cloud are the engineering and DevOps teams, right? So any product that affects how engineers use the cloud, or in other words, any product that is extremely sensitive to developer workflows needs to be built in a way that pays very close attention to developer experience. Our product, we have taken extra caution to ensure that developer workflows are not disrupted in any way, and we meet developers where they are rather than asking them to go and do something which is out of band for them. So that is how we are different from the old world of IGA solutions. And then there are some other categories out there. There's another category called PAM, Privileged Access Management. And then there's another category of visibility tools called CIEM. So let me start off with the PAM solutions, which again, historically have been focused mostly on human users. Again, very similar to IGA solutions. Our benefit over legacy PAM solutions is that we are designed for all kinds of identities and all kinds of access, specifically to the cloud. And we look at human access as well as machine access. And then the last category of solutions that I talked about was visibility solutions. There have been historically solutions like this space called CIEM, which provides a lot of visibility to security teams to what is happening within the cloud. And the benefit of using us is that we don't stop at visibility. We also provide means to govern access, right? So we can be in the developers can actually use us for their day-to-day access needs, right? So we go one step beyond just providing plain visibility.
You mentioned automation. How are you all leveraging automation in this process? How much of this is human in, involved versus automated?
Automation is plays a big part of what we do. And again, the reason here is that we want to ensure that we secure access without disrupting developer workflows. And the way we can do that is by meeting developers where they are in places such as command line or in places such as Slack. And then we also make sure that we automate as many of their day-to-day processes as possible. To give you an example, one very common use case for a customer is a developer requires access to shell access to an EC2 or a virtual machine, or they might require access to an S3 bucket. Historically, the way this would have worked out is that they would have to open some kind of a ticket to the operations team or the SRE team in Jira, and then that team would have to provision access to them. They would have to notify them. And then when their work is done, they would have to remember to ask for this permission to be taken away. And the automation that we have introduced is that by typing a single command in Slack, they can kick off a workflow where all an SRE team needs to do is to click a button and access will be provisioned and deprovisioned automatically after their work is done. And
No.
similarly, for machine access, we employ similar levels of automation. The automation we do for machine access, for example, is to figure out who the owner of any machine identity should be and notifying that person on Slack with the precise steps they would need to take to remediate any access risk for any machine identity.
Yeah. Remember life before Slack? I think it was just AIM. It's a little different. I
I
have
loved
spent
AIM
so
back
many
in the day.
days. Oh,
IC,
everyone
remember
did.
ICQ? That was my big one.
Ah, the dream. And when you were talking about Jira, the amount of days where I've just spent in Jira, like just build it out in Jira today. This is definitely one of our more technical episodes that we've had. And I like that. I appreciate that we're getting more in depth, that we're a little bit less focused on the actual conference, which I think Kevin will follow up on in just a minute, but that we're actually talking about some serious questions when it comes to what is going on and what are your products and what is actually happening out there. And that's why I want to ask about your thoughts around the current state of cloud security and what trends that you foresee that could be shaping in the industry in the coming years. What is the future? Can you predict it for us when we're talking cloud security?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, where do I begin? So, cloud security really became a big thing, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, around the time COVID started, with especially companies like Wiz and Orca coming in with their CSPM solutions. Phenomenal products, phenomenal companies, by the way. Where do I see things going forward? I think a few big trends come to mind. First is that most CISOs and most security teams that I speak to are getting inundated by alerts from a lot of the CSPM vendors out there in the market, right? So there is absolutely a need and a trend for best practices to be baked in to developer workflows. In other words, the shift left philosophy, which a lot of people talk about, which is that if you introduce best practices into development, into software development, then maybe you will take out the need for a lot of these alerts to begin with, right? So to summarize the first trend, the easy one, shift left philosophy, right? The second big trend obviously is with artificial intelligence. And in fact, I would break the artificial intelligence mega trend into two categories, which is the effect of AI on security and security for AI. So let me tackle the first one of them first, which is effect of AI on security, right? A lot of the work that security teams do is organizational in nature, figuring out triaging alerts, and working with different stakeholders within a company to understand security best practices and implement security best practices. I think there is a big opportunity for AI to come in and accentuate the superpowers of security analysts. I see a lot of many companies doing a lot of interesting work on that, and I'm very excited to see how that materializes over the next few years. And the third big trend, like I mentioned, is security for AI. And obviously, what this means is AI in itself, by itself, introduces a lot of attack vectors into an enterprise. The obvious examples being deep fakes, right? But also a lot of opportunities for companies like us. For example, what does that mean? With the proliferation of AI agents, right? I see agents as yet another type of identity that needs to be secured against, right? The rapid rise of AI agents will mean that the number of non-human identities only continues to increase even faster than where it is right now. So that is again a trend that we believe a company like P0 will be well poised to take advantage of.
Last question here, I guess. Not only are you guys a competitor in the Innovation Sandbox, I know you guys have a booth on the exhibit hall. It's 1960, I believe. Is there anything we should be looking out at the conference that we should really be trying to see? What are you most excited about?
Honestly, I'm most excited to meet the security community. For me, everyone is different. I personally get a kick out of talking to customers and understanding their problems, right? Irrespective of whether we are able to solve them or not. Hopefully we are. Even if we are not, it always makes for a lot of very engaging conversations with a lot of different people. That is truly what I'm looking forward to, meeting hundreds of people, understanding the current challenges that they're facing, and just learning and hopefully improving both ourselves, our company, as well as the security posture for thousands of other customers around the world.
Nice. What are you giving out at your booth?
That's a surprise.
All right. Well, fine.
You'll
We'll have to stop
see
by
at the
and find out.
booth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fine.
You stop by to find out more.
Perfect. Will do.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today on the pod. For everyone listening, go to the booth 1960. That is the booth number that you want to be at. See what's going on at the RSA conference, May 6th, just a few days away. And thank you again for coming on and telling us everything. We learned way too much, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ray. I enjoyed my chat with you. Hoping to see you all soon.